Welcome to the Central Assembly Podcast. It's our prayer that this message is an encouragement and blessing to your life.
It's a good-looking crowd tonight. Thanks for being here. Some new folks with us, some coming from the marriage seminar right on over. That's a good habit to continue. And we think we have an enjoyable time for us this evening. Wasn't too long ago, we did a bit of a series, I guess you could call it, that we called Family Portraits. And what we did was use this occasion to introduce newer families in the Central Assembly congregation, talk about their life, their work, their ministry. And it was well received and very enjoyable. We learned a lot about everybody that participated in that. And we're going to do that a few times this spring. Tonight, we are going to have the pleasure of having Andy and Nancy Rotz here. I'll introduce them in just a moment. Next week, we're going to have Tim Lang and his family here from Live Dead Pray. And not only will we do our family portrait interview with them, but we will also go through a season of prayer for a particular Live Dead area of the world in a specific structured form. And we did this in chapel a few weeks ago. It was very much appreciated. We're going to be doing it again next week, so keep that in mind. But right now, I'm going to ask Andy and Nancy to come. Let's welcome Andy and Nancy Rotz tonight. Occasionally, I have to confess to these dear friends that occasionally with my advanced years, I have slipped up and called you the rats, but yeah. I've prayed a lot that I won't do that tonight, so.
I'm used to getting it mispronounced.
We'll see how that goes. Andy and Nancy and their girls, Elisa, Natalie, and Lauren, have come to Springfield as a result of Andy taking the position of communications director for Assemblies of God World Missions. And their history goes way back. They're going to share some of that with us tonight, so I won't. But part of it, I know, took them from Montana all the way to Moldova and places beyond that for several years of ministry before they came here. But we're really delighted to have them with us this evening in Wednesday night Bible study. They've been at Central about a year now, maybe a little longer than a year and a half. And they're one of those families that just blends right in with us. And if you're not careful, you don't even know who they are. And so for that purpose, they're here tonight for us to get acquainted with them and their ministry, the work that they're doing. And I know that it's going to be a good season for us. Andy and Nancy, the first thing I need to do then is to welcome you to Central.
Thank you.
We're glad that you're here. We're always glad for new families that join us. Both of these folks are members of the Faith Builders class. If you're in that class, you'll see them in there. Nancy probably more often than Andy because he's one of those traveling preachers. Nancy is a member of our altar prayer workers team. She's also part of the Weaver School Store team with several other ladies, and that's important because Elisa, I believe, is going to teach there at Weaver next year, and you're scouting it out for her, I'm sure, getting ready for her move over there. So we really do sincerely say to you that we're glad you're part of Central. Of all the churches in this town, you chose us, and we don't take that lightly. We're glad that you're here. Let's start off tonight by doing this, by dropping my iPhone. iPhones are dangerous in church. I was sitting in my Sunday school class in the chapel. Actually, it was Wednesday night service, and one of my colleague missionaries was about four rows back, and service was going on. Everything was just going great. And his phone went off, and he had his ringtone set to that of a rooster. And so this rooster starts crowing, and when he reached for it, he dropped it and couldn't find it.
Oh.
So for about 4 minutes, we had this rooster crowing all through the Wednesday night service. So I'm just going to lay mine down. It doesn't have a rooster on it, but it may be Elvis. I don't know. So Let's just say that you guys were contestants on a TV show, and you were asked to introduce yourselves to your audience. The only difference is on a TV show, they might give you 30 seconds or so, but we're going to give you longer than that tonight. We want you just to tell us a little bit about yourself and anything that you'd like to share with us to help us get to know the two of you better as far as your family and your history is concerned.
So Andy and I met at North Central Bible College at the time. And yay, all right, we got one shout out for North Central. And that's where we met. When we both finished college, then we married and started out as youth pastors in northern Minnesota in a little town called Detroit Lakes. And after 3 years, we went to Montana, and we were youth pastors there at a church in Great Falls, and then we took a pastorate, and we pastored there for about 5 years, and that's when God called us into missions.
Back, we pastored in Harlotin, Montana. So if you you'd really have to know Montana to know where that's out. It's south of Lewis down. Yeah, I got one. Harlotin is a population of 1,000 people. This is interesting, back in the Pentecostal evangel days, okay, for some of you who can remember that, there was a stat that we had about the top highest per capita counties Assemblies of God, and we made the stat. Now, that really sounds, that's what it tells you, statistics are misleading. We had 1,000 people in our town, maybe 2,000 in the county, and we were probably about 200 to 220 people counted our church as their home. And we had an attendance of 150 every week, 120 to 150. And when you look at, you know, 200 out of 2,000, we were doing pretty good. So, but it does skew it. So that was our little success. But we loved Montana, and I was born in Wisconsin. I am a Green Bay Packer fan. There's only one football team in the world, and that's the Green Bay Packers. I don't mind the KC, the Chiefs. I don't mind them. My dad was a carpenter. I'm not from a pastor's family or missionary family whatsoever. I just grew up pounding nails. In fact, I always say, I think one of my first toys was a little toolbox, and it was a little hammer and a little saw. And I probably still have it somewhere in a shed or a container. I think Mom kept it for me. We just pounded nails, and when I was 13 years old, I had to start working with my dad every summer, construction, hauling 2x4s. When you're that, you're just the guy that hauls the 2x4s up the ladder and the sheetrock and the shingles, and so that's what I grew up doing, and never had any intention ever to go into ministry, because I wanted to just get a dog and move to the Yukon and hunt and fish for a living. That's it. And so I didn't even like to talk. I mean, I did not like to talk to people, and so ended up at North Central, and that's where God kind of called us into ministry, called me into ministry, and met Nancy. And, you know, it's interesting how the paths, you don't plan them that way. They just kind of unfold. If you really say just following God is, you know, opening those doors little by little, and none of us are confident of where we're at, but God kind of opens the door.
That's right. That's true. Andy, uh-huh. I recognize when I read your family pedigree there a little bit, you have three daughters.
Yeah.
We're just all curious, what's it like to be the only man in a house like that?
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful.
You thought about that a minute,
didn't you? Yeah, I thought about that. And there's times that I say, it's time to go hiking in the mountains. No, I would never trade any of our girls anywhere. You know, I know a lot of areas of the world, people say, oh, you got to keep having to have a son. Now, I'm happy to have three girls. I'll have three sons someday when all three of them marry. You know, that's it. But it's interesting. Even our dog is female. I mean, so some days you just come home and, you know, just estrogen. I mean, I just don't understand it whatsoever. And, I mean, Nancy's got a lot of grace. I'm bewildered at times. I consider it was my first cross-cultural experience. You know, it's a different, really think about it. I mean, we have two totally different languages. You know, if you ask a guy, what do you think about this, my clothes? A man hears that and says, oh, you want my opinion, right? Mm-hmm. Now, if my wife says, Andy, what do you think about my dress? What is she asking? Is she really asking for an opinion? No, she's asking for a compliment. So, you know, there is two different languages there, men's language, women's language, and you got to learn it. So that was my first cross-cultural learning experience. So,
well, to be fair, I probably should ask you, Nancy. I'm just curious, do the four of you, well, with the dog, the five of you, Do you collaborate together on living with one guy in the house, or does that just come normal?
It's just come naturally. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we collaborate. You know, I think the girls understand a lot of times, oh, that's dad. He's a guy. He doesn't get it. And but they love their dad, and it's great. They're glad to have him as a dad. And our oldest, she has her first boyfriend.
Oh.
And and he came last week. He's a pastor, a youth pastor in Homer, Alaska.
Oh wow!
And somebody told him about her, and he called her up, and this is the second time they've met in person. But I actually think Andy kind of got used to the, kind of got liking having a guy around the house. And we all liked it because he's been building shelves in the garage and none of us had to go help him hold those up for, you know, 10 minutes or so. Levi got out there and did it. And Alyssa said to me, this is nice. I'm not having to hold the shelves up, so.
I know some of you maybe have gone through this before, but man, it is hard having your daughter. I mean, with daughters, I'm just thinking, I don't want some gorilla taking this girl out on a date. You know, come on, I get kind of protective. I was really good. I talked to him straight about it. I had some good questions, and we talked, and I just said, and just so you know, Levi, you know, I am a hunter. You know, I will track you down if you mess with her whatsoever. I can track anything down.
He could be your trip to the Yukon, though, you know. Could be
he
your
knows
dreams
that
come
too.
True. Could be your dreams come true.
Yeah.
Well, I think I read where your whole family likes the cabins at the lake and outdoor life like that. That's got to be fun with girls.
Well, I know you go first.
Well, I'll talk about it. When Andy and I were just dating, my parents, Minnesota, I grew up in Minnesota, the Minneapolis area, and a big thing is to have your place up north. At the lake, and they bought a place, and that was really a wonderful place for us for a lot of years. And even when we'd come back from the mission field, that's where we would go. We'd always have time there, and it was just a place of peace. And then my parents died, and when they died, we sold the lake home. And about 6 years ago, the first year we were area directors, we were home for the summer and just on the road all the time. And I prayed and I said, Lord, I am so tired of not having a place where we can just stop. And I didn't pray this. Nobody knew I prayed this. I said, could you just give us a place? And we were in northern Montana, northwestern Montana. I said, somebody up here has to have a guest house they could let us use. And that October, Andy spoke at a church up there. And a lady who had been on a team in Moldova came up and said, we just finished a guest house. Would your family like to come use it next year?
Awesome.
And that's been, how many years has it been? We done 4 years, 5 years ago? We have come every year. And her husband really, he was a doctor in town. He didn't really know us. And so the first year he wasn't sure. But at the end of that year he came up and he took one of our daughters by her shoulders and said, promise me that you'll make your parents and you guys come back next year. And so it's been a place we've gotten to use, and it just is just respite for us.
Awesome.
And it's in the mountains of Montana. It's awesome. Gorgeous.
Awesome, awesome.
And I really like extreme stuff. So when I said go to the Yukon, when I'm with the Russian pastors, when we were Russian area directors, one time I flew out to Perm, which is in the central Siberia. You know, I know people always make the joke they're going to get sent to Siberia. I like Siberia. I really do. I like the tundra. We drove 8 hours up north, parked the car. The guys pulled up with, I think we had 4 snowmobiles. We got on snowmobiles. We took the snowmobiles another 2 hours out in the middle of nowhere until a cabin, and we stayed there in the cabin. And it was just fantastic. I like that kind of stuff. So I've been from Alaska to Russia to anywhere in the mountains. I will go. I enjoy that.
And what do you think about Springfield?
I don't like it that rustic.
What do you think about Springfield?
Springfield is a great town. Okay. I really have enjoyed it. You know, everybody always says, you know, the joke emissions or even in the AGU round, you know, oh, you don't want to end up in Springfield. But I always think, and I've gotten so I tell people, you've never lived here. You don't know. This is a great town. So I like it. Of course, we lived 5 years in a town of 1,000, and it was 90 miles to go shopping, and then we lived in Moldova, so.
It was 90, for our second child, she went into labor, then I drove 90 miles to the hospital. So it was a long ways, so. That. But I love Springfield as a town. It's a great thing. I am just still so claustrophobic with all the people in the Midwest. So I'm used to space. Montana, I just, you know, like I love hunting and outdoors, and I just would go to the mountain and I'd have 100,000 acres just to myself. I can hike the mountains and never see a single person. Here, I haven't even figured out what to do, because if you go in a little patch of woods, you see orange pumpkins everywhere around. You know, there's so many people wearing their orange. So I'm still trying to figure it out. I love the town. I don't get my outdoors fix here yet.
Well, listen, I heard a story that sounded really interesting to me about your girls making homemade pies for Speed the Light. My first thoughts were, how do you get in on that? But it did sound like an interesting way to be involved in missions. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'll talk about it. So we did two itineration cycles in Minnesota. And we wanted to be somewhat near my parents when the first time my parents were still alive. And missions house opened up and we lived there. And it was a church of about probably 700. But I think the year before we were there, the youth group raised $80,000 for Speed the Light. Mm. And every year they've continued to raise. That was their highest year I think they ever did. But I think then every year, and what the youth pastor would do, and he's now the district youth director in Minnesota, but he would just challenge the kids, use what skills you have to raise money. So last year, this is what they knew about raising money for Speed the Light. So last year, Pastor Christian said, you know, we're going to do a week, and we're going to bring in offerings at the end of the week. So they said, and I was gone. I think I was gone to Europe for Project Rescue Advisory Board meetings. And Andy, you know, they started talking with him about what they could do. And they said, well, we know how to make pies. And they know how to make pies because a couple years before, we were both gone on Pi Day, you know, which is March 14th, yeah. 3.14, yeah. And our school in St. Petersburg would celebrate that, and the kids would all bring pies in. And so Lauren, our 16-year-old, never has been one to back down from a challenge, especially if that challenge is in the kitchen. So I was gone. I said, well, I'm sorry, I can't make your pies for you. That's okay, Mom, send me the recipe. We'll figure it out. And they did. And so they had learned somewhat pie making. And last year, they took on the challenge, and they have become good pie bakers, let me tell you.
So last year, we just put it up on Facebook. Anybody want a pie? Our girls will make it. Minimum $25 or something like that. And they raised $1,100.
Yeah,
it was over $1,000
like
for Speed the Light.
Wow.
Themselves, the two of them. So this year, I think they're up to $1,500 already for Speed the Light, the two of them. So the challenge is, so often youth groups would say, oh, maybe as a youth group, can we raise $1,000 or $2,000? No, the challenge is every one of the youth needs to raise $1,000 or $2,000, and then they all come together and bring it. Just God opens up. So, yeah, you can get in on it. All you got to do is say, I want a cherry pie, or I want a French silk pie, and they'll make it. So Randy Hurst just bought two. I think he gave him $100 for two cherry pies. He ate one, gave one to Brother Trask, and he said, I got somebody in Houston who wants a pie. He'll give you $100 for a cherry pie. So they're going to make it, and he's flying down there and going to give it. So it's $100 or $25 or $50 at a time. Last year, we just paid all the ingredients. I covered it all. So my contribution to Speed of Light was all the ingredients. This year, we're still going to do the same thing, but yeah, we're figuring out what it is, and I'll write a check to the church for that amount of money.
Awesome.
Send it to the grocery thing.
That sounds like an amazing experience.
And I have not eaten any of them. I just want you to know that. I have not tasted a single pie, but they're working on, I think they've got a couple of apple pies.
They came home from school today, and they were working on apple pies, and they had a cherry pie that went in the oven and came out before they left for youth group.
And they got a chocolate pie on order and another French silk.
So awesome. Keep that in mind, guys.
Yeah. Homemade crust and all.
Oh, wow.
They do it all. So.
Well, listen, we'd like to hear a little bit as well about your journey into missions, how the Lord worked in your lives to move you in that direction from being pastors. Just tell us about the journey.
I guess I can probably start it, and then you jump in whenever you want. We came home from a mission service. It was one of those kind of typical things. Pastoring, I love Montana, mountains, the outdoors. We loved it, but I came home and I started the conversation. I said, I wonder if God is speaking to us about missions. So it just was kind of that little spark, that little wrestling with, but you know how it, you never know sometimes if it's you or the pepperoni pizza from the night before kind of feeling, you know, that really. And so we began to just pray about it and prayed about it and prayed about it and just said, God, is this really you? And it never went away. I mean, we didn't hear no, but it didn't hear yes. And I'm pretty stubborn, relatively stubborn, or she would
quite.
Say, quite stubborn.
His mother once said to me, said no to him, Andy, Alyssa must have all her stubbornness from Nancy, because you haven't lost any of yours.
Thank you very much. So we were praying. I came over to the church early one morning. It's like 6 o'clock. I think probably 3 months down the road on this thing. And I was pacing back and forth. It was about 6. And I said, God, I just have to have an answer from you. Is this really you? And as I was pacing back and forth, I had my Bible open. And I looked down, because I always read through the Bible when I'm praying. And it was a passage of Scripture where people said, gave Jesus excuses. You know, I just got some new oxen. I can't follow you. Another guy said, my father just died. We go back and bury him. And Jesus' response was what? Let the dead bury the dead. Mm-hmm. And it was like right at that instant, God just spoke to me and said, Andy, you're making excuses. And this really is the truth. So often, God tells us something to do. And we really know it's God's leading, but we try to find justifications for it. You know, and in fact, if you're really spiritual, say, let me pray about it. Even though you know you're supposed to say yes, that's a delaying technique oftentimes. But that one, I just knew. And so I called my parents a couple hours later and talked to my dad and said, Dad, I'm just feeling like maybe God is calling us into missions. And the very first words out of my dad's mouth were, why don't you wait until I'm dead first? And I'm not exaggerating. I'm thinking, I just read that. Where was that again? You know? And it was like a confirmation to me that, I couldn't back out of that one at that point. You know, it was God's called us into missions.
And for me, it was just right after that time where he began to wrestle with that. And they were good friends who had come to speak at our church. And then I went to visit my sister, and I was sitting in church, and there was a missionary speaker that Sunday who kept saying, who's going to come? The harvest is plentiful. Who's going to come? And God's spirit was so heavy on me, and it was just one of those things where I was weeping and weeping and weeping and knowing, and my sister and brother-in-law are looking at me going, what is going on? And I said, I don't know when, I don't know how, but I know that God is going to call us into missions, and I know right now we're pastoring. And I really didn't want to go into missions. I liked life in America. I liked, even though I was in a town of 1,000, I liked that little town of 1,000. And I really didn't want life to change at that point. And so God had to do some work on my heart to be ready for when then he was ready to say, okay, let's go for it. And I feel like this is, you know, this is what God has. And it was only a few months.
And then we asked, so we started, but we didn't know where. So we asked a lot of questions. I called down and talked to the region directors. We had a heart for Eastern Europe. So I was on the phone and saying, we have a heart. Tell us about some of your needs. And they would go through Albania or Poland. We just knew Eastern Europe. We just had a heart for that area of the world. I don't know why. But we were praying, and we wrote Moldova. I mean, I had this whole list, probably 20 different countries, Moldova. And Nancy said to me that time, we're not going to that country. I've never even heard of that country before. In fact, that's most people. Where in the world is Moldova? They have no idea where it's at.
It's between Romania and Ukraine, yeah. For all of you who are still wondering. Yeah, where is it?
It's this tiny little country. It used to be the former Soviet Union. So I know it was September 11th, 2001. We were sleeping in bed, and at that point, our middle child was 2, and the toddler walked in. And if, you know, when you have little kids, it's a stage of life of perpetual exhaustion. You're always tired. I mean, you never get rest. And so I wake up, and her face is about 3 inches from mine next to the bed. And so I pulled her into bed, and then I realized what I did, because Natalie does jumping jacks. She's not the one that sleeps very gently.
Or dead.
Or dead, yeah. I don't
she's
know.
18 now.
She's
I think
18
she's
now,
okay.
Yeah, I don't have a problem. But at that time, she was the toddler that you did not want to have in bed. So I got up and actually moved to the couch. And I was laying there, and I had a dream. I had a picture of myself standing before a group of people. Never saw anybody's face. But I heard myself say, we are so excited to be your missionaries to Moldova. And I stopped and went, Moldova? Just like that. And the voice coming back to me was, Moldova. Moldova? Moldova. 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 And God and I had this little conversation back and forth. And I walked in the bedroom at 3:45 in the morning, and woke Nancy up and said, Nancy, the only place we need to go is Moldova. And she said, I could have told you that 6 weeks ago, and rolled back over and went back to sleep. So she already knew we were supposed to go to Moldova.
That's interesting.
So we ended up landing there. It was, I mean, the application came in the mail the day after Lauren was born.
The day after we got home from the hospital with her.
Because Lauren was born the 4th of July, and it came. And so Nancy was 2 days out of the hospital, 2 days after giving birth, and I said, here.
He comes home, and I'm sitting there with this new baby. We've just gotten home. You know, we had to pick up our mail at the post office. Here's our packet. Fill it out. I said, I've just gotten home from the hospital. I believe the missions department will wait a day or two.
Well, you know, we have more than the average number of missionaries and retired missionaries sitting in this audience who relate to that journey and how the Lord deals with each one of us. In different ways, but similar ways as well. So you went to Moldova. You were there several years. You became country director. Ultimately, you guys served as area directors, living in Russia, I believe. Nancy, you began a home called Freedom Home while you were there. Why don't you tell us about that story a bit, what it's for, what they tried to accomplish. Is it still functioning?
So we were just about 2 weeks in Moldova, and somebody invited me to go to this park opening for, you know, when we arrived in Moldova, it was less than 10 years since communism had fallen. So it was the first nice park that was being built for children in the city. And somebody invited me to go to it, and I went. And I met this Swedish woman, and she heard I was a missionary. And she was the head of an anti-trafficking organization for human trafficking. And she said to me, what's the church going to do about this problem? And I thought, yeah, the church should do something. You know, why don't they do something? Well, then we began we set up a meeting with her, and we sat down and talked with her. And as we began to speak to her, Jesus began to say to me, you're the church. What are you going to do about this? And I really didn't know anything about human trafficking. I didn't know it was a statistic. I had read about Moldova. High, high numbers of girls were being trafficked. And so Omar Beiler was our area director at the time. We went and said, we think God is moving on us to do something. And I began to look a lot of what was happening there. And there was a lot of stuff for kids coming out of the orphanage, but there really wasn't anything to help restore women who had been trafficked. And so we began to plan, and we bought a half-built house. We knew that nobody would ever rent a home to us or rent a building to us if we were going to take anybody who was on the margin of society. And so we bought this property. It was a half-built house, spent a couple years finishing it into our second term. And Omar actually connected us with David and Beth Grant. And they took me to India to show me what was happening there. So we affiliated with Project Rescue. But we raised the money and started the home and opened up and had a lot of different women come through. And they came through with their children. And we cared for them. And some were there a couple years. Some were there 4 years. We did end up closing the home itself about 2 years ago, shortly before we were asked to come here. I really felt, we had moved to Russia at that point, but I really felt like it was time to close it. It wasn't functioning the same without me there setting a culture of grace and stuff. Moldova's not, it's a shame-based culture. And even the church has a hard time with what grace is. And so I had been feeling that, and when I went to announce it, it was interesting, because a lot of the staff had been with me for the entire time that we ran the home. And every single one of them told me that God had been speaking to them about other ministries that they were to go to and other things. I mean, every single one, God had already revealed to them that it was time for them to be done there too. And so it was really a bittersweet time for all of us. But the girls had, we'd transitioned most of the girls out, and we weren't finding the numbers. That was the other thing. We just weren't finding the numbers anymore. And cost-wise, it really, to keep it open, we hadn't had a new girl in for a couple years, because a lot of the Western European countries know what's happening, and they're giving asylum to women who have been trafficked. And so we closed it, but we still have a Freedom Home project going there. We have another missionary who runs it. We have one national who works with it. We track with the girls who came out of the home. Their children, we have 3 children that go to a Christian school there. And you know, they're the future. And the girls, their lives have been changed. Their lives, it's just amazing to see the difference in their lives. Andy, do you want to tell the story of one, Amy or Esther? Or?
I was just going to say what Nancy had talked about. It really, it is the goal of all ministry, you know, especially in these brokenness, that you want, the goal is to graduate them to freedom and to their own living. So that's what we did. We did move it onto there. And we were back last summer, and it had been a couple years since I had been back, and maybe longer even, but Nancy had been back regularly, and we got delayed. You know, travel is sometimes a pit, so you'll understand. If you've traveled anywhere, you know, best laid plans. It works great when it works great, but sometimes it doesn't. We were late getting in, and the girls were all meeting us at a restaurant, and we got down there, and, you know, I'll change the names, Amy and Tasha, and I'm trying to think of Tina, and all of them. They and the kids came and met us there. And when they came pouring out and just hugging us, one of the girls, Nina, is not accepted Christ. Most of them have accepted Christ. It takes a year before they come to accept Christ. I mean, some of the stories are just amazing because the distrust. I mean, they've been prostituted and sold and broken and seen people killed around them. I mean, just horrendous stuff. So it takes a year before they ever even get to the point where they trust you. And about a year or two down the road usually is when they accept Christ. And the transformation is just amazing. But they all come running out of there, and they hugged us. And you really are holding a miracle in your arms when you see a life transformed. Nina, who the one I mentioned, has not accepted Christ. And she'll look at me, and she'll say, I talked to her. Are you ready? Have you accepted Christ yet? No, not yet. But she's also the one that when we got ready to go, she knows the way. But she also knows what the cost is. It's not a light decision. And she said to me, when are you going to come back, Uncle Andy? You know, when are you going to come back? I said, I don't know. It's hard for me to come back. If I come back next year, is that okay? Yep, that'll be okay. And she hugged me for the very first time. She never is the one that would ever give me a hug. Mm-hmm. And she hugged me. And, you know, we just are seeing a generation that was transformed. So
wonderful.
It's great to see your spiritual kids grow up.
Absolutely.
It is.
Very true. I want to tell about one more woman that was in the home. Tasha, she came to her home. She was living on the streets with her daughter. And another girl that was in the home knew her and said, I know this other girl and I know her story. And she was trafficked all over Turkey. Like, she knew every city in Turkey because she says, I was there and I was there and I was there. And Tasha came to us, and she was mid to late 20s at the time. And acted like an absolute child. Because trauma, if you understand trauma, a lot of times person's growth, emotional growth, stops at the time trauma starts. So she probably acted like a 13, 14-year-old most of the time. So she was in the home about 5 years. We really saw a transformation in her. She went from really, a lot of the girls, they had different ways you characterized them. And Tasha was lazy. She was just plain lazy. She didn't want to get up and do anything. And it was hard to get her to work in the kitchen. It was hard to get her to do anything. And she transformed to be this really hard worker. And she really loved the Lord, but she struggled. And she was in our first graduating class. And she had such a hard time. And she would talk to me, I'm not ready to leave this home. I'm not ready. I said, Tasha, it's time for you to grow up. You can do this. She had a daughter. I said, you can do this. You can be out of the home. You can do it. And she has done really well. She's held a job. But when she was in the home, she broke her foot. And she was studying to be a cook. And she didn't stay off her foot enough. And so the foot never healed right. And she needed to go back and get it done. And one thing about Tasha, and she's different, Moldovan women are mostly really small. And Natasha was quite overweight, very overweight. And about a year and a half ago, her foot was to the point she was in constant pain. She's working as a cook at a school and on her feet all day long. And we said we would help her get that foot taken care of so she didn't have to suffer with that her whole life. And she went to the doctor, and the doctor said, I won't do surgery on you. He said, you're too overweight. And he said, it's not going to heal right. It's not going to be right. I'm not going to do it. And Natasha took initiative, started exercising and eating right, and lost weight. And last year when we saw her, it was almost like, oh my goodness, I've never seen a woman like this. She had lost so much weight. So we see the outward. But I kept thinking the whole time we were there, there's something different about how she's relating to me. And I went away, and it was like a day later, it dawned on me. It's the first time I interacted with her like as we were adult to adult. It was the weirdest thing, but that's the kind of stuff
absolutely
we dealt with there. And she loved Jesus, and a lot of them, they came to Jesus and they followed Jesus, but and Andy got to baptize most of them at the little church that we were a part of. It was just so exciting. But a lot of them still to get to a point where they could take responsibility for their lives and do what was right and all that was really hard. But it was amazing. That's her foot and a doctor telling her, and now she's able to get the surgery.
Awesome. Sounds like a great work.
It was a lot of fun.
For your information, Andy will be our speaker this year for our Spring Missions Convention Sunday morning, our Faith Promise service Sunday morning, April 22nd. So we'll look forward to that. Let me just ask you, as from your position as a member of the AGWM Executive Committee and your world perspective, tell us briefly, what's going on in today's world in missions? Where are we? What are the trends? Are we moving upward, onward? What's happening?
You know, I think in anything, God is still doing incredible, incredible miracles around the world. So I'm always positive and challenging. I think a lot of our challenges in missions probably reflect the challenges of the church in the United States. So one thing the church cannot afford to be is isolationist. God has called us to go build the church. Where? Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, uttermost parts of the earth. And we have got to just have a passion for this world. And so the more churches get inward focused, the tougher it is. I think things have changed. I mean, they really have. If I went 20 years ago, most churches are going to have a Sunday night and a Wednesday night service. Now, missionaries now, you know, I remember when we, even 15 years ago, they said you have to have I think we had to have 10 services a month or something like that. You have 10 services a month. Now, missionaries are going out right now. They go, 10 services a month? How am I going to do that? You know, can you get 10 Sundays in a month? Because they were trying to they get just a Sunday morning. Most churches don't have Sunday nights. And I honestly believe people are called into missions the more often they hear somebody's story about how they're called into missions. And so we're just looking at a straight challenge of how many hours people get to hear missions. And so the shrinking opportunities for people to hear the stories. We are a movement that was built on missions. So and this is our DNA, that we need to be a church always. And this is preaching to the choir probably in this place here. It's not very hard. I mean, we really are. We all believe in missions. God, help us somehow send people out. And I think there's some great things, and I think there's some challenges. So there's headwinds that go into it, and we have a little bit of a decline from our peak years of missionaries. So I'm just saying, God, you got to start speaking to people in different ways. And I think that's my challenge, even as a communications, is how can we get the message out? So we're going to do some stuff. In fact, this June, we're set up for videos again. I'm going to try to get, I want 20 to 30 missionaries, even more, just to sit down at our table, and we're going to hear about their call, how they were called into missions or how they were called to their country. I just want to hear it. We're going to put it in a tight little video, maybe 2 minutes. I got to have them share it in a real tight way. And we're going to push it out onto the internet, you know, into social media or on YouTube. My kids don't watch television, but they'll watch funny stories on YouTube. So I need to get the stories out there of how somebody actually was called. When you hear, how many people were in missions here? I just want to check. I'm going to see how many hands. Okay. A lot. All of you have your own stories of how God spoke to you. Supernaturally to go into missions or supernaturally to go to that country or maybe both. I mean, it really is. And we need to get our kids to hear the same kind of stories. So we've got to get it out. I think there's great opportunities. I have the other trend I'm seeing is it's getting more and more challenging in the world. There's more countries that are closed. We call it sensitive. In other words, you can't use the M word, missionary. You know, we are workers there. So it's taking creative access. So we've even done stuff like businesses, missions. You'll hear those kind of things. It's simply because you can't get in. You can't talk about it anymore. You can't get a religious visa into India. I mean, you have got to go, I'm going there, working, setting up a business. And It's changed. Yeah. So we have got to do it, but there's opportunities that are out there. So there's some wonderful things and some challenges.
True.
The best of times and the worst of times.
Yeah. We look forward to hearing from you in April when you're back with us.
Well, I was just in Equatorial Guinea. I was with Carol right there. I don't know, 3 weeks ago, a month ago. I don't know. I lose track of time. It's the impossible places are not impossible. That's what I want to challenge you. A year ago at this time, I was in Iran, and the fastest growing church in the world is in Iran.
Wow.
So I came from Russia. You know, everybody goes. In fact, when we first became area directors of Russia, I said, "Oh Lord, help us. Nobody's talking about Russia. Let's try to get Russia on the map so people will start praying about going to Russia." We didn't have any missionaries before I started there. There wasn't anybody appointed for 7 or 8 years. And the first missionaries, when we were air directors, we had two that were appointed as missionaries. It was the first in at least 7 years. Well, Russia got on the map, but not on the right ways that I really wanted it to be. Now everybody knows about Russia in the news, but it's not always positive. But it's not impossible. You know, the general superintendent of Russia, Edward, is one of my dearest friends. And he goes, "Okay, the law's passed. It's not going to stop us from preaching. We've got to preach. No matter what happens, we're going to preach.
That's awesome.
We're going to preach the gospel."
That's awesome.
And so I think we tend to think the impossible is there, and we need to just stop that and just say, "God will make a way."
Absolutely.
Let's go.
Amen. Well, we're about out of time, but we're always interested to hear new families tell us, what drew you to Central Assembly? What brought you to this particular congregation?
You know, part of it is felt like the church, we'd visited her a few times when we were here in the summer, and we felt like the church fit a lot of who we were, and the style of what the church was and the way it was fit a lot of who we were.
Our girls, I mean, there's two, when you have kids, you understand. Our girls started going to youth group, and it was hard coming back. I think culture shock coming back is harder than culture shock going.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, anybody who's done it. I mean, I'm telling you, it was hard. Our girls, they love St. Petersburg, Russia. They'd get out, they'd go to school all by themselves, catch a subway, you know, total freedom, walk around the city by themselves. There's none of that. Here, you got to drive everywhere. They didn't fit into school. And I think Lauren said, because they go to Central High School at the IB program, she said, I think I've heard the F word more the first week of school than I've heard in my entire life before that. So, I mean, it's not these great, you know, wonderful, cheery places of where they're going. And my girls love ministry. They're trying to show the light of Christ there. But it's, you know, it's public school. This is different for them. And but they plugged in, and they just said, "We don't want to change, Dad. We've already..." So they have plugged through. They have stuck it through. And now you break through that barrier.
Sure you do.
And I got a shout out for Steve and Melissa Pulis and their small group, because Melissa saw the girls, met the girls, and actually the first Sunday that we were here saying we think we're going to go here, we were introduced to the Pulises, and then they invited my girls to their small group, and that was really where the girls felt like the most that they connected, and they loved to go, and they loved to be there, and it was a strong part. And then from there, they got in to feel like, you know, the youth group was their youth group. But it started with the small group, and that was awesome for them.
I'll say the last thing. I know you got to end. Lauren, 16, Lauren and Natalie are both very talented. They both did fine arts. Natalie did music, got a superior with invitation. And Lauren preached again and got a superior with invitation.
Wow, awesome.
She's the one who preached last year at the fine arts. Preached in the Sunday morning service here. You know, she was the youth that did that. So she did another great job. And she walked through, essentially said, "You know, this church was started by a woman, right?"
That's right.
And then she looked, man. And she says, "I think I should be the next woman on the other hand." So one time she wanted to be the president of the United States. Now I just figure she'll be the first female general superintendent of the Assemblies of God. So that's my goal.
That'll work. Well, you guys are like multiple couples here at Central Assembly. You're a ministry couple with a lot of travel involved. Andy, I know you're gone a lot. Nancy, you sound like you travel a lot as well. How do you handle Specifically relating with a local church when you're from a ministry couple and your spouse is gone a lot.
Yeah. You know, that was something too that it was our last itineration cycle was 6 years ago, and we were in central Minnesota, and we just really felt like when we were back that the gift we could give our girls was that they didn't travel with us all the time. Our girls did not like being new people in church. They didn't like being the new kids there. Some kids thrive on that. Our kids, it made them shrivel. So we said we were just going to be a part of one church. And so we were at River of Life in Cold Spring, Minnesota. And at the beginning of the year, Alyssa was a 10th grader, Natalie was a 6th grader, and Lauren was a 4th grader. And there was lots of griping in the house. And I was griping inwardly because Andy was gone a lot, because that's what he had to do. He had to be speaking every Sunday. And he was in different parts. Our itineration, our support base is all over the country, so he was traveling every weekend, home a lot during the week, but when he went to Montana, he would be out there for a week and a half or so. And God just really spoke to me that I had to quit complaining, and if I quit complaining, the girls would quit complaining. And I remember one night sitting down on Alyssa's bed, calling the girls in, and saying, listen, we're not going to gripe about this anymore. We are going to, this is the place God has for us right now. This is what we're called to in the year when we're back in the States. Dad's gone, and we're going to have a good time while he's gone. He can just deal with it, all the fun he's missing with us. And so we did. We began to just be a part of the church we were at. I was in the prayer ministry there, too, and it was a lot because the pastor knew us, and he said, Nancy, you get up here, come up here and pray for people. And the girls were involved in tons of stuff at church, some things at school. And if Andy could be there, he would be there. He's always tried to check his calendar and see that he can be, but he misses some things for that. And we just decided that that was what it was going to be. Well, it was the end of that year that we were asked then to be area directors, and which again was a lot of travel, and his job is now. And so we've just decided we plug in churches. This is our church. This is where we'll be. And we'll go whether he's here or not. A funny thing is a couple weekends ago, I traveled. I don't travel with him on the weekends very often. But a couple, we had 2 weekends back to back. One was in Florida and one was in Wisconsin. And I think it was the Florida weekend. But it might have been the Wisconsin weekend, I don't know. But I was talking to Natalie, and she was going, and I'll usually put it on speakerphone so we all can hear, and or he can hear. And Natalie said, Mom, we really miss you being home. It's just been really, you know, and they're fine. The two of them are just fine for a weekend without us there. But we really miss you, you know, and it's just not the same, Mom, when you're not here. And she's going on and on. And Andy says, what about me? And she said, Dad, you're gone all the time, and we've had to get used to it.
Poor guy.
Yeah. And they love when he's home. It's great when they're home. But
and I really work hard at, like, I've got to go to Laos in a couple of weeks and then to Mozambique in May, and I will kill myself to get back. So, I mean, I will do it. I will pay for it just because I want to get back for my kids. I'd rather be tired in my home with my girls. And it's tough. It really is. I think that's something you can pray for.
Absolutely.
And it's always hard. It's a little hard for me sometimes coming back, re-entering. If I've been gone for 4 or 5 weeks, I come into church and I go, okay, where is this again? You know, what am I doing? And it is hard to get plugged in to a church. And, of course, everybody knows our girls. You know, they see them, oh, yeah, I love your girls worshiping you or something like that. They really love that. And I tell you, that's all. It doesn't matter where I go. If our girls love God, that doesn't matter. That's all that
counts.
That's all that matters.